Good morning. I'm Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. Today, I am so pleased to have one of my personal heroes on the line with us today, Ms. Shermaine Gunter Gary. She is the Executive Director of the Atlantic County Council of Youth Programs Incorporated, of which the Rites of Passage Program, the Atlantic City Theater Guild, the Venice Park Basketball League, and the Atlantic City Youth Entrepreneur Program fall under. In the spirit of full disclosure, I must tell you that I am interviewing my sister. Shermaine, welcome to the program.
Hello.
You know, Shermaine, I've been trying to get you on a program for some time, and I'm very excited about our discussion because we're going to talk about a very important topic about leadership, and that has to deal with our youth. And this Sunday, one recent Sunday, we were in church together, and Pastor Days, he talked about the concern of what's going on with the moral fiber within Atlantic City. And I think your program, the Rites of Passage program, is a true testament as someone who is fighting this war within the community within Atlantic City. But before we dive into that, can you share with the audience some of the highlights of your education and your experience?
Okay. Well, I studied at Widener University towards a degree in English. I wanted to be the great writer. And then I studied at Temple University, and I received an associate's in chemistry, where I tried to, be the great chemist. Neither one of those worked out, and I ended up working as a manager with McDonald's, and that's when I got into working with young people. And at that time, I volunteered a lot with the Boys and Girls Club,
mm-hmm.
Big Brothers, Big Sisters.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I was also a Girl Scout leader.
And then you were also involved with the YAP program?
Yep. When I came to Atlantic City, that I did all of that when I was in Philadelphia. And then when I moved to Atlantic City, I became the director of the Atlantic County Youth Advocate Program. And basically, that was a program where we just had a wonderful birthday yesterday, a young people from being incarcerated. We were their last chance. When I got one of those kids, they had one foot in jail and one foot in the community. So it was my job to formulate a case plan and to work with the young person and the family to stabilize them here in the community so that they weren't incarcerated.
And how many years did you work on the YAP program? And also, if you can just speak up just a little bit louder.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with the YAP program about 6 years. And in that 6 years, we had a 70% success rate.
How do you define the success rate in that program?
Well, with that program, the success rate was the young person not being incarcerated again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we had many, many other successes with the program because we also concentrated on education, vocational training, personal development, and, making sure that they became stabilized citizens in the community.
I remember one of your students in the program, Angel, who's now doing very well, raising a family, and
yes,
and yes. So, how did you move into the Rites of Passage? How did that all come about?
Well, in 1996, I was the director of Health and Human Service for the City of Atlantic City, and I would go to the school systems. I would speak to the young people about job employment. It would be right before the summer months would come, and I would speak to them about what it takes for you to get a job and interviewing skills. And I did an eighth grade class, and I couldn't tell the difference between the girls and the boys. They all looked the same. And so I decided to develop a program for young girls to get them to get back to the point of being young ladies. And that summer, our sister Diane was working with the National Rites of Passage program, and she was in Philadelphia, and she asked me to bring Mommy up for the weekend to spend the weekend with her so that Mommy could see her program. So I drove up there on a Friday night, and in this large room, they had about 100 girls that were angry, and they didn't want to be there, and I was like, I looked at my sister and I said, you're going to spend a weekend with these girls? And she said, watch what happens on Sunday. And I'm like, yeah, right, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to really transform these girls. So when I went back on Sunday, I saw 100 young ladies talking about aspirations, loving each other, loving themselves, dressed appropriately, talking appropriately. I was like, what did she do in the weekend with these young ladies that got them to being from those, the same thugged out girls that I had been seeing to these young ladies that were treating themselves much better? So she gave me the concept of the rites of passage, and I had a college intern at the time, and I had her to research and do some more work on rites of passage and to make the program into a full-blown program, because I didn't want to do a weekend program. I wanted to do a program that would be sustaining and it would be ongoing, that so these girls in the community would have continual support. And so September of 96, we launched the first rites of passage program with 25 girls.
Wow. And when you launched the program, what was your mission at the time that you established the organization?
Well, our mission was to get these young ladies to love themselves and to have greater aspirations than wanting to be a backup dancer or a rapper.
Mm-hmm.
That was the majority of what all of the young girls that we interviewed, that's what they wanted to be.
Wow.
So we wanted to heighten their expectations of themselves and to really see that there's a whole other world out there other than booty dancing and rapping.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So about the program, how many weeks does it last, and exactly what do they learn? What's in the program?
Well, we start out with a parent orientation, and we invite about 50 families to come hear about the program. We only have 32 slots, so we wheeled it down. We tried to get a good mix of young people from all of the different schools, and also male and female. Now, when we first started, we were just female. Now we do male and female. It's a co-ed program. And then we have 14 weeks of workshops, two mm-hmm. hours each week.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have one community service project that they do. We have two field trips. We have a dinner theater where the class before them that graduated, they actually cook, serve, and entertain the next class. Then we also have our higher education workshop where they go to Stockton, and the Black faculty and staff at Stockton tell them what it takes to get into the school. They take them on a tour of the school, and they answer any and all questions they have. We also have the admissions director. He also comes in and tells them what his criteria is for young people to get into Stockton. And we take them down to Baltimore to the Blacks and Wax Museum. That's part of our history program where they learn about some of their history. And then we have a day of fun at the harbor. And then we end up the program with a crossover, which is the graduation, but we call it a crossover because our program primarily works with 11 to 14-year-olds, that middle age. So when we're saying crossover, we're hoping to get them over that hump of those middle years.
Mm-hmm.
Because we found out that a lot of our young people are straight A, AB students up to the fifth grade, and then come sixth grade on, their grades start to drop, and by ninth grade, they're failing. So there's a whole lot of things that's happening in that middle school age that we're trying to capture and keep them on that same track of that AB honor roll level. And it's been pretty successful in that. We do workshops on I'm So Pretty, I'm So Handsome.
Okay.
where it's really talking about their inner beauty, not their outer beauty.
Okay.
Our young people, they're all about the looks and the name brands. So we have different wonderful speakers that come in and talk about what it's like to find out who you are on the inside, start to love yourself on the inside. And that's a very moving workshop. The young people really get into that workshop.
Do you ever get a chance to videotape the workshops?
We videotaped the first year, and then we also had one of our sponsors wanted it videotaped 1 year, so they actually paid for somebody to come in and videotape all of the workshops. But we have never videotaped since then. We only videotaped the crossover. That's the only thing we actually have on videotape. We also have workshops on economics, where we invite one of our local banks to come in and talk to the young people about growing their money, which is always very interesting because the young people don't have a clue of all the information that they're being exposed to. And some of them actually open up their own bank accounts and they start saving, and they understand that concept of starting to save your money early. We do workshops on My Body, My Temple, which is personal health and hygiene. We have a local nurse or doctor come in and talk to them. We do careers, where at the beginning of the program, all of the young people tell us what they want to be when they grow up, and we actually target people in the community to come in and do a one-on-one with them.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. So that gives them an opportunity. If they want to be a doctor, then we have a doctor in the community that will come and sit down and talk with the young people about, this is what I had to go through to be a doctor. Teachers, nurses, and then we also partner with the Brigada, and they take us on a back-of-the-house tour of the Brigada, where they take us from entry level all the way up to the CEO, and they show all the young people all of the jobs that are available in the casino industry. So
it really shows them the path to get to that type of successful position.
Exactly.
And they get to talk to someone who's actually done it, you know, to ask and answer all of those basic fundamental questions.
Exactly. And we have to filter and give the kids some of the questions because they, you know, we found out in the beginning, they really didn't know what questions to ask. Which is sad. Because if I'm sitting here in a room with the CEO of the Brigada, I got some questions I want to ask.
Right, right.
Okay. But, you know, they're young. They're 6th, 7th, and 8th graders primarily. We do have some 9th graders. So we feed them the questions. And there's a lot of times that they'll come in with their own questions also.
And Shemaine, the program you started, you said 1996, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. 1996. Wow, that's a long time.
15 years.
And you've had how many classes now?
We have 2 classes each year. And for 3 years, we did both. We had 3 classes each session because we had a female class, we had a male class, and we did a class in Pleasantville.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, those are the crazy years. So there was for 3 years, I did 3 classes each year, but now we only have 1 session because of, you know, funding. And during the 9/11 attacks, a lot of the casinos and organizations and people started generating their funding to the name brand organizations. and we never did get that funding back.
That's a bit strange. Atlantic City is a very, very small town, and the impact that your program is having on the city is extremely effective. I just find it hard to believe that the folks there who are in power and who have the wherewithal don't recognize that and really help you with the program.
Well, you would think so, but unfortunately, there's politics in everything, you know. So if you're not in with the in crowd with who's in politically, you don't get the same look-see. So,
you know, and this program is really all about leadership. It's all about identifying the best of leadership, and unfortunately, we have to identify the worst in leadership. And one of the key characteristics of a poor leader is favoritism or self-patronage. And it appears that this, a lot of that goes on in Atlantic City.
Yeah, unfortunately. You know, we've been watching Boardwalk Empire, and I said, well, this has been happening for a long time. I said, whoa. I said, is this something in the air? Is this something in the salt water?
You know, it's interesting when you do look at Boardwalk Empire and you look at how the city was portrayed back in the, I guess, the 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. It's such a long way from that, from where it was, in regards to really being a first class resort. And back in the day, I guess it came up to it really came down to the people who were providing the excellent service. And the question is, if Atlantic City is going to compete with Vegas, if it's going to compete with Philadelphia, for that matter, Pennsylvania, they have to provide service. And and it seems like that the young people are the people who are coming through who could be a part of that service.
Should be. Now, the Revel is doing something very different. And I've heard this story before, but it seems like they're really going to put their money where their mouth is as far as training and educating the community and trying to make sure that they hire Atlantic City residents first.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're out there in the community now, and they're having community meetings, and so we'll see where that goes.
And when they say that they're going to do training, have they hired a firm to do that training?
Well, what they're doing is they're using existing training agencies that are already here,
mm-hmm.
and they've already gotten them geared up, and you know, mm-hmm. like they know that I do training, so they've mm-hmm. asked me to do some training.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So they're, you know, they don't have the monies, I think, to put toward the training for the community, but what they're doing is they're giving us resources,
mm-hmm.
so that we're able to get the young people in and get them do that pre-employment training that they need to get the job.
Right. I mean, the thing about it is that when you're in the entertainment business, and Atlantic City is in the entertainment business, when people spend their money, they want to feel good about spending their money, which means that they need to have people who are going to be polite, people who are going to provide them prompt service, and that they're going to really eat great meals and see great entertainment.
Yeah, just like we just went on vacation.
Yes, and yes, yes.
That's our expectation was that's what we should have.
That's right. That's right.
And it was there.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a wonderful vacation.
We did. We did. We did. Celebrating our sister Libby and her husband Mike's 35th wedding anniversary. That was really a truly great vacation.
Yeah.
And so when you think about the goals for the Rites of Passage program, do your goals change every year, or do you have a set of goals and you might have some additional goals for a particular class?
Well, you know what? We have a set of goals, but there may be a particular class that comes in, and I may say, okay, we're really going to have to dig into some education piece here because half of them can't even fill out their registration form.
Mm.
Their reading levels are way, way low. So what we'll do is we'll structure a lot more tutorial programs that we can refer them to or get them into, and we'll do something to assist that class. But our goals, they basically stay the same. You know, that's to curb the violent behavior that our young people have, to stop teenage pregnancy, open up avenues that young people have no idea exist. And that's the one thing I really like about this program, is just exposing them to things that they would never have been exposed to otherwise. And it, light bulbs go off sometimes when young people see different avenues that they could take other than, you know, the Atlantic Avenue up and down. That's all they know.
Right.
Atlantic City,
right.
You know, right. And then, you know, we heighten their self-awareness of themselves. And we also discourage drug and alcohol abuse. We do that each and every workshop. We have something that we talk about, because drug and alcohol abuse is so prevalent with our young people here in the community.
Mm.
As I was speaking to the Revelle, and I was asking them, is there anything we're going to do about the rampant drug problem we have? Because the last time that the Brigada went out and tried to do the Atlantic City first, well, over 50-some percent of the Atlantic City residents failed the drug test.
Oh.
Yeah. It's very high. And, you know, so, you know, they were like, well, it's nothing we could do about a person's lifestyle, but we are letting them know we are drug testing. So maybe they'll stop.
Mm. Wow.
You know, we have a large drug usage here with the young people. It's recreational. We have a lot of functional drug addicts that are here in our community. It's extremely rampant.
Wow. Functional drug addicts.
Yeah. People that go to work every day and they hit that needle every night.
Oh. Oh, this is not like smoking pot or something. This is sticking a needle in their arm.
No, we have a lot of, like I said, I can look at people because of the fact I've been working with families of drug addiction and alcohol addiction for years. So I basically can look at people and I know.
Mm. Wow.
But they're functional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go to work every day.
And you find that a lot of their children are part of your program?
A lot of their children come into our program. And,
mm-hmm.
Our children fall into that same generational use of drugs because they see it all the time and they think it's okay. There was one of our drug and alcohol workshops. Our speaker, which was a police officer, was talking about marijuana usage and, you know, how you can go to jail and everything. And, you know, girl raised her hand and she says, no, marijuana's legal. My mom smokes it every day.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, too much information.
You're not supposed to say that out loud.
Exactly. So that's a lot of what we're faced with a lot of the young people that we work with, young parents that don't have a support system, and they're winging it, trying to be parents.
Hmm. And how is your organization structured? Do you have folks? How many folks do you have helping you with the Rites of Passage program?
With the Rites of Passage, I have 14 volunteers. 12 of them have been with me since 1997.
Wow.
Yeah.
And your son is very involved in the program, Brian.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
My nephew.
Mm-hmm. Yes. He, when we started doing the male Rites of Passage program, he had just got out of college, and him and his friends, and as I told them, they still had Similac on their breath, and they said, oh, we'll come in and we'll be elders. Yeah, okay, but you know what? They've been wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken the structure of the program. They went through the training, because we do mentorship training, and we do program training for this with anybody that wants to come in and volunteer, and they really stick to the concept of the program, and they mentor the young people very, very well. They have lifelong young men that have really changed their lives.
That is excellent. You know, seeing our young black men to embrace other younger black men to mentor to them. And that's where, you know, we always hear people talk about, oh, it takes a village to raise, it takes a community to raise a village. But
yeah.
It's so important that we do that. And,
You know, I think I know the answer to these next questions, but I have to ask for our audience so that they'll know. But when did you first realize your aspiration to be a leader?
Well, you know what? when I was in junior high school, there was an election for class leader,
okay.
And I went for it, and I got it, and I got that first little taste, and I've been rolling with it ever since.
Well, see, I thought you were going to talk about how you used to march us down to the beach.
Oh, that too. Yeah, well, that was my training. You know, I was being trained for when I went for the other positions.
Yeah, me, Brian, and Kevin, and James, and Tanya, and Lauren.
Marched y'all down every week.
That's right, every day, that's right. And what do you think are the key traits of a good leader?
Well, if you're a good leader, you have to be a good listener. You have to be a good motivator. You have to have passion for what you do. You got to have vision. You have to be a good team leader and a good team builder. Because if I didn't have those 12 volunteers that have been with me all those years as a team, it's no way that Rites of Passage would have been as successful as it's been. It's never been just me. It's always been the team that has worked on Rites of Passage with the young people, putting together the different workshops and molding and guiding how things went in the program. And then a good leader really needs to know when to make key decisions. And when you make a decision, that's your decision.
And how would you describe your leadership style?
I'm a dictator. Everybody. I'm pretty authoritarian.
That's very honest. and I would agree with that.
you know, people they get used to me. They know how I am, and you know, I try to participation. You know, I try to be a participant sometimes. And, you know, I end up right back at the helm.
You know, believe it or not, Charmaine, we are coming upon the close of the program, but I wanted to ask one last question and tell us about your hero in your life.
Oh, that's my mom. when I was young, mom took care of everybody in the community. Now, mind you, she had 7 kids, and we had 1 pair of shoes, 1 pair of sneakers, 1 Sunday dress, and a couple of school clothes, and we had enough to eat, but I was like, how is she going to give somebody else something? And it's all of us here. And I really didn't like it growing up. But I saw the value as I got older.
Mm-hmm.
Of all of those years, she nurtured different people in the community. And how she would take somebody that was so troubled and mm-hmm. had so many issues. And they would turn around and be a productive citizen in the community, all because of the time and effort that she took with them. And I was like, wow, I want to do that. And I started doing it. And because it's great value in being your brother's keeper.
Well, Charmaine, I've enjoyed our time together today. Now, you're going to come back next week to follow up on some of the key statistics and some of the issues that you face in Atlantic City, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Ms. Charmaine Gunter-Gary, the founder and executive director of the Rites of Passage program in Atlantic City. Charmaine, thanks again for your time and being our guest, and we look forward to our follow-up interview next week. This is Darrell Gunter, your host of Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at wsou.net. Remember, leadership begins with you. Have a great weekend.